You're listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Brave Parent Podcast, Season 2. And today I have a really incredible treat for you. Also a very good friend and an esteemed colleague, a dentist. But you wouldn't know it when you hear him speak, because he doesn't speak on dentistry. This guy is kind of a rock star in our profession. I just introduced him as the keynote speaker for Collaboration Cures. His name is Dr. Uche Oriatu, but he really just needs one name. I said, if there's anyone in the world that just needs one name, it's like Oprah or Prince or Sting and Uche. Anyway, he's pretty awesome. He wrote the book, The Miracle of Health. He also is a board certified,
I'm a professional member of the American College of Sports Medicine. I'm double certified as a trainer because most trainers keep one certification, but to maintain two, it just means you have all kinds of other requirements like writing articles and some video participation things. So it's just ups my game, you know?
So he speaks a lot about movement. And I was looking for who am I going to get to really address movement? But then I also really want authenticity, showing up, being present. How do we help kids cope with stress? He, of course, is an expert in all things nutrition. So there's so many directions we could go. When he said today, like, what would you like me to prepare for? I'm like, you've been preparing your whole life for this. Just show up. So we can ask Lauren any questions we want in the area of health, and the focus being how do we help kids grow up to be healthy? I can't believe now I have a lawnmower out here. Can you hear it? Sorry.
I can't.
Anyway, how do we help kids grow up to be healthy? And I want to start with movement, Uche. I think that, you know, in the book, I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, Brave Parent, but in the book I address under the movement section, I sort of make an indictment about organized sports. I think they're wonderful and they can be awesome. They teach kids how to work with, you know, teams and how to work with coaches and community and all of that. But I also really want to make a ploy for play for daily movement that just feels like you haven't lived a day if you haven't exercised your body. I don't even like the word exercise, but really significant movement as a part of everyday practice. So what can you say about that?
No, I like that. I'm a big fan of daily movement. I think there's a huge segment of the population that doesn't move, even though there's lots of science to show how movement is healthy, makes you feel good, it recreates you, recreation. However, so many people actually think of it as a competitive endeavor and bragging rights. And so that lends itself to people falling off the wagon. But no, I'm a fan. Daily movement is amazing. We've known about the value since 2000 years ago with Hippocrates and Socrates and Plato, the Greeks, you know, a sound mind and a sound body. So that being said, I'm a fan. There's no argument for me.
What are some of the daily practices that you think families could learn more about that might be able to weave? Obviously taking a walk, or I say having a living room dance party, but you've been involved in some yoga and various other modalities. What do you think would be a cool way for, say, Lauren with her two kids to be able to do some daily movement at home? And maybe weight training too, or body movement, body weight movement and things like that.
Okay. There's many ways to look at it. Like there's a formal way of exercise, which is looking at as what are the three components of a complete physical fitness program, which is strength training, aerobic training, and flexibility training. Less than 3% of North Americans do all three. Only about 10 to 15% do any regular physical activity. So anything is better than nothing. So if someone's asking me, what should someone do? I'm literally saying, walk the dog. Don't delegate to a dog walker, even if you're a six-figure earner. Go walk to the mailbox. Build a little inconvenience into your life. I park pretty far away from my dental office. I park at the end of the mall. So literally walking in and going home every day from that far parking spot adds 1,500 steps. And the average North American does 1,500 steps a day. The average North American is 1,500 steps a day. So that being said, just me parking far away gives me the physical activity of an average North American. So anything above that gives you good physical activity. So I'm all about informal. I think the formality part with kids, just part of the certification process I'm in, they've actually shown by age 13, 72% of kids have fallen off the wagon off all sports, no matter how good they are. So whether they're AAA, whatever kind of status they are, 72% of kids fall off the wagon of all sports by age 13. So how can you get kids into physical activity? Having great moms like Lauren, having great moms like you, Susan, in terms of, you know, Albert Schweitzer said the best teachers is role modeling, like leading by example. So if mom or dad or the guardian or there's an aunt or a grandma or grandmother in the environment that makes physical activity look fun, kids are going to do it. If they see dad going triathlon, Ironman, leaving the house at 4 o'clock in the morning, coming back at 9, bitten by dogs, ravaged by storm, that doesn't look exciting. So I think many people make fitness look exhaustingly horrible. So you make it fun. It's doable, sustainable, maintainable, and for a lifetime.
Love it. Lauren has been, since we started working together with Brave Parent, she's really upped her game with her fitness and with her kids participating in that. Do you want to tell them, Lauren, what you're doing?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been more of a family activity. It's funny because they've become my motivation too, when they are here, because I do want to set that example for them. But it's, you know, before earlier this year, I was working with a personal trainer. So I would take the kids when they were free with me to the sessions to see it. But now I primarily work at home with the discipline that I have learned from the trainer, and they're always involved. Even with the warm up in some way, you know, we'll do high knees, we'll do dancing, we'll do whatever it is. And they love being a part of it. So that's really made a difference with them. And they'll go around and they'll do like push-ups now and sit-ups, and it's the cutest thing.
And Lauren also was saying during the writing of Brave Parent, she said, you know, I'm starting to, like, they want to kind of tell me my workout, which I'm all about. So she said, I'm getting a different workout than I might get, but I'm going to do what they, so they're kind of coaching her too, which is fun. To be able to say, do this movement, mom, and she does it. And so it's kind of fun to weave that in.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Isn't that great? What about mindfulness? What about being able to center? You know, kids often have, and I know you're not a psychologist, but you certainly are good at helping us as a dental audience for my team members come back feeling like I can do this. We're surrounded by stress, positive and negative. We often make snap decisions, some of them good and some of them not so good, during moments of stress, instead of taking a minute and learning how to use our faculties, our breath, our mind, all of that to recenter and to make better decisions that feel more like who we are. So we feel proud of, you know, our reaction to stress. Can you say more about that?
There's so many different ways of approaching stress. Most people think of it as bad, but Hans Selye talked about good stress. They talked about the fact that getting up in the morning is basically a stress to your body. Getting vertical is a stress. Mm-hmm. Going for a walk is a stress. However, when it's within the confines of the body's adaptation, you get the body strengthening. When it's outside of the body's adaptation, which is good, but on a consistent level, like 3 2-hour workouts in a row, or me running a marathon today, which I'm not going to do, but that will be a bigger stress. Winning at the Powerball, 800 million, people lose their minds. You think, oh my God, I would love to win the Powerball, but marriages could end. In 2 years, you could be bankrupt. So there's good stress and bad stress. So that being said, the whole stress word, as you know, has a lot of bad connotations, but it's actually a good thing. You give a kid no stress, like from a helicopter parenting point of view, you fight the kid's battle, you write the kid's report, you do the kid's presentation, you walk the kid to school, you sit beside them in class, you take them out for recess, you massage them at recess saying, come on, go back in there, you can kick it today in that spelling bee. Now you have a kid that's just a dish rag in college and can't do anything. So no stress is bad. Too much stress is bad. There's a mid-range for different levels of adrenal bounce back. Some people have a bigger bounce back. You know, think of Oprah Winfrey. She was manipulated and incested growing up, but she bounced back pretty good. Some people, though, a bad hair day, they're talking about it for days. You know, you should have seen Monday. My hair didn't turn out right. So everyone has a different level of adrenal resiliency.
It's the toxic stress that continues on that makes people sick. Those are difficult.
Yeah, for sure. So that being said, stress has a good side and bad side, but you can train your adrenal zone to accommodate more. But when you think of stress, people think of just the boss yelling at you or the bank not giving you your loan. However, stress stacks upon each other. So if you're getting enough sleep, you're more resilient. But if you're not getting, you're a shift worker, which is 30% of people. If you're a single parent, that's right away that is a bit of obviously a challenge. A little bit less money, having a physical disability, living in the Nordic countries, and now you're not getting enough daylight during the day. If you're one of the 90% of Americans that don't get enough magnesium, if you're one of the 80% of people who tolerate their job. So now you might think, oh, not tolerating your job might be tolerable. That was the only thing that was stressful. You stack it with a marriage that's not happy. You stack it with magnesium deficiency. You stack it with short daylight time and wintertime. And now you have a problem. So people don't realize stress summates. So you stack upon each other. Say, it's not so bad. I broke up with my girlfriend. Not so bad. But all of a sudden now you stack that with shorter daylight time. You stack that with magnesium deficiency. You stack that with the fact that you had a challenge with your assistant. Now it's too much. So people often think, yeah, it's not going too bad. But you stack it together. Now you're overloaded.
Absolutely. And kids' stress is stacked too. You know, when you think about adolescents, there's a whole bunch of body change. I mean, none of us have ever said, boy, adolescence, that was fun. I'd love to do that again. You know, they're getting, everything is changing from the way they look to their voice to, you know, growing breasts and pimples on their face and, you know, bleeding through your vagina. Like there's all kinds of weird stuff happening. And then there's all this change in social pressure, right? Your tribe might change, or you're suddenly kicked out of your friend group because you're not cool enough. And then there's social media stuff. So there's a lot of stress that kids have. We often think, how bad can it be? I'm the one out working and earning the dough and bringing the garbage in and taking care of groceries, and sort of saying, gosh, how bad could it be for them? Really? It can be quite stressful. We need to teach kids, along with ourselves, really good coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. You know, breathing deep, taking a minute, using, you know, especially being kind to the people who have earned our respect. Oftentimes we teach them to be polite to strangers. Strangers are one thing, but it's the people you love the most where you have to say, like, you know what, let's say that in a different way. Let's be respectful. Let's at least be kind to each other during this. So those are hard.
I like that. That's nice.
Thank you. I have recently been listening to a book that a patient of mine recommended called Untangled, and it's really about raising adolescent girls, but there's a lot of good lessons in there for all of us.
Okay, I got three. Let me just download that right now.
Yeah, right. It's good. I really like her work.
Okay.
I get some of my best work through my patients. This one was from a physician who's raising teenage girls. Anyway, interesting.
I see that. Okay.
Yeah. And even the stress of going through a divorce, parents going through a divorce, kids have stress about that. And there are resources, but there are not enough professional resources to deal with significant stress in kids. So we need to be able to access good ways of doing that at home, I think.
So yeah, I'd be curious to hear, you know, any suggestions related to that too, because of course, all I know sometimes with my kids is just trying to talk to them and ask them how they feel and ask questions.
And how has it been for you, Lauren?
Sometimes it doesn't feel like enough, right? I mean, because I know they're still trying at their young age to find the right words to describe how they feel, but I try to get down on their level. I try to make sure I'm not distracted by anything else and really listen to them. And like I said, ask questions. And all I am hoping I'm doing ultimately is just letting them know I'm there for them whenever they do want to eventually talk, even if it's not in those particular moments. But it does sometimes feel like it's not enough because, you know, you just want to solve everything and make it better. And, you know, when things like divorce or any sort of change in life, it's not a quick
residence, divorce, change of a classroom, yes. Starting school again.
Yes.
Change of a routine, all of that.
Yeah.
It's important that kids really feel loved. And I make that in a message in the book, but instead of just acting in loving ways, being present for them. And in the book Untangled, she uses the analogy of a swimming pool that kids swimming around, like literally when they learn to swim, they kind of swim up to you and then kick off and then they come back and you got to be in the pool for them to be able to be present. Right.
I love that.
And being able to be for kids to feel heard is really important, more important than the decisions that you make as a result of hearing them, mm-hmm. is that they're heard. Mm-hmm. They'll if they're heard, they'll go along with your decisions about them, rather than just laying down the law. The other part is like during significant times of stress, it's a good time to talk about the fact that, you know, in our family, we don't keep secrets, only delightful surprises, because harboring secrets leads to that kind of, as Uchi was saying, that toxic stress. I mean, there's good stress and bad stress, but the stress that recurs, not just the bad hair day, but something happened to me in the bathroom that I don't want to talk about. And, or somebody did something inappropriate, or I saw something I shouldn't have, or someone asked me to keep a secret and they're doing something that I know is bad. Those are dangerous and they can last a lifetime and affect generations of, mm-hmm. So those are kind of, that's kind of an interesting point. Anyway, I didn't mean to get on all things psychological. Uchi, tell us about a time, who was most significant to you growing up? Cause you're kind of my Zen master and I just love the way you approach the world. Tell us about who was instrumental in you becoming you as a kid. What do you remember about the people that were most impactful to you?
Yeah, good question. The more I read and see about childhood upbringing, that there's a conscious upbringing and then there's the unconscious upbringing, like the subliminal messages you got. So many times I always joke that we can probably only remember four significant events in our childhood. That if someone said, give me the four significant events, your parents are going, well, I have 1,000. And the kid goes, well, there's four, dad. There's the time that you, there's a time that she, there's a time that he. And you're like, that's it? So that's the conscious, but it's the unconscious thing that's more powerful. You know, it's like those are the horses pulling the wagon. But so I think sometimes the conscious one, you think this is it, but it's all the unconscious role modeling and exampling and sharing. You know, if I saw my dad come home tired, unavailable for a few hours after work, I'm now learning work makes you exhausted, unavailable and tired. And because that's the only message I got for the first 18 years, work is exhausting, tiring, and many times you're unavailable when you get home. No matter how much it says, hey, go for what you want, go for your dreams. I've got 10,000 messages that show that work is tiring and exhausting. So no matter what you say, I've got my subliminal unconscious teacher, which is way more stronger than the message of rah, rah, rah we might get in a Tony Robbins event. So how do you erase that? I don't know. Jordan Peterson talks about going back and doing some hypnotherapy and eye training, becoming more aware of the message that you might have gotten unconsciously from your dad or your mom, or, oh, mom, stay at home, dads do work, or dad's submissive, mom takes charge, dad's the quiet guy who comes home with money maybe, but mom makes all the decisions. That's now my subliminal message. Women might seem like they might be accessory, but they're the dominant force in my family. So I'm just saying, so in terms of, I can tell you consciously, but obviously doing some self-work and self-evaluation, I can tell you the unconscious things. I'll give you some conscious things that I did get. My mom was an upbeat, sweet Irish lady that was totally, you know, God-driven, loved the fact that you can change your space. She read Norman Vincent Peale. She read Reader's Digest. She put quotes out all the time without making them look exhaustive or funny. So that was a huge thing for me, that positive thinking, like, because Emile Kiwe saying every day in every way I can get better and better, and every day in every way you can get better and better. So that was my conscious messaging. My dad was a big believer in a sound mind and a sound body. That was always a, you've studied enough, go outside and play. You've studied enough, go outside and play. A teacher came up to me one time at a speech class in grade 10 and said, that wasn't a very good speech, but you have a unique knack of getting people on your side. You have a unique knack of getting people to be in harmony with what you're saying. I'm like, what does that mean at age 15? He goes, I don't know. He goes, you got a knack for this stuff. And that's carried with me every time I'm anywhere. I have a mic failure. My clicker's not working. The room is too dark. Hey, I was told in grade 10 that I have a unique knack of getting people on my side. So that's a massive conscious message right here in my brain all the time. My mom, every day and every day I can get better. My dad, sound mind and sound body. That being said, I'm sure there's lots of unconscious messages, which I'll never be privy to. But that's where my triggers are. That's where my challenges are. I have no problem with every day and every way. I have no problem with the harmony. But the unconscious triggers, unless I'm mindful and slowing down, I'll always be the slave to my unconscious triggers. So that being said, meditation, spiritual practice, not getting tired. When you're tired, you're more exposed and more vulnerable to your unconscious triggers. If I'm well rested, I'm the master of my destiny. Staying up too late on a red eye, now my unconscious trigger is going to rule me for the day. So
I'm done with red eyes. I hate them. I feel the same way. Wrecks a day. It's interesting because as you're saying this, I'm reminded of how many kids in my dental office get a script from their parents about who they are. And for many years, it sticks with them. So they'll say right in front of a child, he's my difficult child. He's my super shy, quiet one. She's the one that's all over the place. Can't keep, you know, and I'm like, wow, these are really, really strong messages, negative rather than instead of saying shy, like he's my thoughtful one. You know, we can really change the script so that it does make it's always going to make a difference. What you tell children they are, they think they are until they find out who they are really. So we have to be careful not to label them and put those negative conscious thoughts in their mind. He's the trouble. If anyone's going to get in trouble, it's him. He's, you know, it's like, okay, what did you just say?
Like, I think sometimes when I hear that, I slow it down and breathe it in and go, wow, this is the programming. This is where it is. Mother's not happy with herself. We always project. So mom or dad's not satisfied. Mom or dad hasn't progressed to the level they want. So they project them out to their projects, their human project, to the child. So she's telling me more about herself being difficult than the child. So I breathe it in. I'm not going to contradict her at the moment, but I'll breathe it in. And sometimes you talk about etheric energy or physiological energy, emotional energy. I breathe it in. The kid somehow, I can actually touch the kid's shoulder and he knows, hey, I just feel more grounded now with that dentist. They feel me breathe it in. They think, hey, as an adult disagreeing with my mother, I'm getting the conscious message. I'm sensing some unconscious energy of I might be more than this person who's raising me. And I might go on then being very profoundly supportive of everything they do. These are great teeth. I can't believe it. Look, you fill the chair up like an athlete. Now that kid might hang on that one word from an adult who has no ulterior motives, but they know mom and dad calls me difficult. They say I'm the mover. I never sit still. Somehow this doctor is telling me, wow, I'm very intelligent. I can speak very well. And sometimes I think we often don't think our words count, but that kid 20 years later might say, I love my dentist. He always was there for me. She never let my mom say something without me feeling I was enough. Now I've made an impact for life with a simple touch on the shoulder, with a simple inhale, and then two or three words more of positive support for that child during appointment. So anyway, it's fascinating when you start being mindful about different things in your life and watching from an observer point of view. And that's when life really gets elegant, when you become an observer. And they talk about metacognition, to literally see myself. I'm not going to swear as much. Ooh, I caught myself before. I never catch myself before. I'm physically changing my brain. And now I'm becoming an Uchi project, part of this timeless being, which I am interrupted by every now and then by stubbing my toe or missing a flight. I've been told my red wine choice is not available. But to go beyond the physical, to metaphysical is, I'd like to spend more time there. The formless, ageless, timeless.
Love it.
And that's a beautiful place to be.
Love it.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent Podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you choose to buy your books. Bye for now.